Emmeline Hill is an associate professor of equine science at University College Dublin, and along with trainer Jim Bolger, was the co-founder of Equinome Limited. She is now chief science officer for the equine science company Plus Vital Limited, a world leader in the development and provision of genetic tests for the international thoroughbred horse racing and breeding industries, all of which means she's brought science into the equation. Will your horse be a sprinter, a miler, or a stayer? Will it prosper on grass or dirt? Hill has found that in something called equine exercise genomics, the answers can be found. We will be right back with Emmeline Hill, but first this message from our sponsor, TaylorMade.
Not this time. Giants Causeway's most brilliant two-year-old ever and America's fastest juvenile in 2016. Ran a 4 3/4 Ragazin in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile, faster than Classic Empire, and his 102 Buyer equaled Classic Empire. Dominated the Grade 3 Iroquois Stakes at Churchill by 8 3/4 lengths over eventual Kentucky Derby runner-up, Looking at Lee.
Not this time, full of run in the Iroquois.
Not this time. Standing at TaylorMade Stallions.
Welcome back. This is Bill Finley, the host of the Thoroughbred Daily News' podcast, and we traveled to Ireland today to talk to a fascinating individual and a scientist, Emmeline Hill. Emmeline, before we proceed, my introduction with big fancy terms might have gone over some people's heads, so just ask you in layman's terms, explain what it is that you do.
My job is to try to understand the genes in the horse genome that are contributing to the wide range of traits that contribute to a horse being an elite racehorse.
Okay, so that gives you the nuts and bolts of what you do. And again, quoting right from articles that I've read about you and things from your website, I read somewhere that says, but Hill's work didn't really take off until she collaborated with other scientists to sequence the horse's genome. Okay, again, remember that we're not talking to scientists, we're talking to horse trainers, horse owners, maybe even some horse players. Sequence the horse's genome. I'm going to ask you again, what exactly does that mean?
The horse genome is the complete complement of DNA or genetic information that's contained within every cell within the horse. A horse is made up of billions, even trillions of cells, and inside every cell are the instructions in the DNA that tell the cell to make particular proteins that make the horse what it is. So what we did as a group of scientists in 2007, we set out to sequence the letters of the DNA code. DNA is made up of the letters G, A, T, and C, and there are 3 billion of those letters that make up the genome sequence. So the job of the Horse Genome Sequencing Project was to understand the order of those 3 billion letters in the horse genome. From that, then we were able to understand where the different genes lay within the genome. And we were able to understand that, first of all, from our understanding of the human genome and by through the relationship between the horse and human and other animal species that had previously been sequenced. So in that way, we were able to build up a map, let's say, or it really was a gene map, or known as a gene map, of where the 20,000 genes that are contained within the horse genome, where they actually lie.
And then the key question is, how can that help people identify characteristics in their horses that they might find useful?
Yeah, so not all horses' DNA is the same. In fact, there are many differences within the DNA, and it's those differences that make each horse unique. So what we're really most interested in are the points in the genome where there are differences between two individuals and whether those differences in the DNA have an actual physical effect on the horse. So when we're looking at traits of interest, we're looking across the or throughout the DNA, throughout the genome, for differences that have an effect on a particular trait that we're interested in.
And they turn for home in the Kentucky Derby. Barbaro comes roaring off the turn, opens up by three with 3/16 to run now. His entry made up the inside, showing up still in the second spot, joined by Bluegrass Cat, who's plugging away down to the final furlong, though, and it's all Barbaro. Barbaro in front by five. Very impressive. Barbaro and Edgar Prado rolling on to win Kentucky Derby 132.
You just heard Barbaro winning the 2006 Kentucky Derby. He was a brilliant racehorse, and he had four full brothers, none of whom had a fifth of his talent. From the standpoint of genetics and DNA, Emmeline, how is that possible? I mean, we know that all great athletes aren't created equal and that all brothers and sisters in human athletics aren't created equal, but what separated Barbaro from his siblings so far as the research that you do and talking about the effects of the genomes and the DNA?
Well, it's not absolutely fascinating because for such a long time, for centuries, breeders have relied on pedigrees to inform them about the potential of a horse to perform on the racetrack. And if you're looking at the pedigrees of full siblings, those pedigrees look exactly the same. In half siblings, it's slightly different, of course. But let's say in the case of full siblings, the pedigree page looks exactly the same. But what they might have inherited from their parents can be very, very different. That's because each individual only receives one copy of a chromosome from their sire and their dam, and either one of those pairs of chromosomes, or the parental chromosomes, can be passed down to that individual. So that means there's a 50-50 chance of getting one or other pair of the parental chromosomes. Also, complicating the matter is that when the gametes are produced, that is the sperm or the egg cells that go into making a foal, during that process, there's something goes on that's called recombination. And what that does is that actually mixes up the genetic material from the grandparents so that it's not exactly the same in the production of the gametes. So I suppose the long and the short of that is that no two individuals inherit the same DNA from their parents because there's a 50-50 chance. So they're only getting 50%. They would only have 50% sharing from their parents, and then that's diluted again to the next generation, where it's a quarter and then an eighth and a 16th and so on. And then it can all get mixed up. So it's really, you know, I think that when we think about breeding, you can really consider it as very much like a genetic lottery. You never know what's going to be passed down from the sire and the dam to that individual.
Plenty more to come from Emmeline Hill, but first a message from our good friends at TaylorMade.
M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16.
The main reason we ended up trying M. Shawish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, you know, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, you know, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it, you know, wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is M. Shawish, the winner of the Don Handicap.
Emmeline, famed Irish trainer Jim Bulger has been a friend, a business partner, and someone who was a great help in launching your career in research. Tell us how he fits into this story of your success, your company, and all the work that you've done.
Yeah, Jim has been a huge supporter of the science for the last 10 years or even 15 years. When I was first funded as an academic in University College Dublin to do this research in 2004, the very first thing I had to do was to go and ask people if they would be willing to contribute samples from their horses for my research. Now, remember, this is 2004, long before the horse genome was sequenced. It hadn't even been conceived that that would be a possibility, because at that time it was, you know, the cost of sequencing the horse genome was in the order of millions of dollars. So really what I was proposing to do was a very, very early, early adoption of the idea. So Jim was one of the people that I knocked on his door and asked if he'd be willing to contribute samples for my research, and he was willing. But he was the only person that the following year he phoned me and he said, I've got another set of yearlings that have just come into the yard. Would you like their bloods too? And by the way, how's it all going? So really our relationship really stemmed from his curiosity about genetics and what genetics could tell him about his horses, because he recognized that even though he has a large number of horses kept and managed in the same environment, and he puts the same effort and top class management into every horse, one horse might be a Derby winner and the horse that's stabled next door might be the horse that ponies him down to the start.
Now, one of the first things that got you headlines was the recognition of what has been called the speed gene. And apparently you've had great success with this, and it's been a very useful tool for Jim Bolger and others. Could you explain this? What do you mean by the speed gene?
The speed gene is one gene of the 20,000 plus genes in the horse genome that's responsible for making an individual. The speed gene is actually a gene that's called myostatin. And myostatin is a gene that's responsible for control of muscle mass development. When I started out in my research, we started looking at this gene because we knew that there was a difference in the musculature between sprint-type horses and horses that are better suited for more stamina or stamina-related races or races that require that are over more distance. So we started looking for these differences in the DNA in the sequence of the DNA of this gene to see if there are any differences between sprinters and more stamina-oriented horses. And we found that there was a difference and that this significant difference enabled us to categorize horses on the basis of their genetic type. So horses that have two copies of the C-type chromosome inherited from both their sire and their dam, those are the horses we call CCs, and they're best suited to sprint-type racing. We found horses that have two copies of the T-type chromosome inherited from both the sire and dam, we refer to them as TTs, and they're better suited to long-distance racing. And horses that inherit either a C or a T from the sire or the dam, and they have what we call CT genotype, they're better suited to middle distance racing. And this is really, it was a huge surprise to us, actually, because nor did others ever expect that a single gene would have such a major influence on an athletic trait in thoroughbreds. But the more research that we've done, and we've at this point tested over 15,000 horses, a very, very large number of those are group race winning horses. The more work we do, the stronger our findings actually become. And that's very unusual in science. Often what happens is the more research you do, it starts to unravel what you've found. But in fact, the more research we do, the stronger stronger the findings become. And not only our research group, but other research groups around the world have found the same thing.
Here comes Trading Leather, Festive Cheer, Galileo Rock. They're being followed by Little White Cloud, Ruler of the World. Trading Leather hits the front for Kevin Manning. Galileo Rock is staying on the near side. In third is Capra Rushes, then Festive Cheer. Trading Leather in front. In second place, Galileo Rock. But up towards the finish, it's Trading Leather who's going to win it for Jim and Jackie Bolger.
What you just heard was the 2013 Irish Derby won by Trading Leather, trained by Jim Bolger. And Emmeline, how did this research and the speed gene in particular affect his management of this particular horse?
Well, Jim always, since 2010, has been using the information to inform his training and his breeding strategies. So his training management allows him to identify horses that are more likely to be early maturing two-year-olds, those that are going to train on well as three-year-olds, and to manage the race calendar for each individual horse. So in general terms, that's how he uses it in his training operation. Jim's unusual in that he also has his own breeding operation, and in fact, he uses the speed gene to inform almost all of his matings. He knows the genetic type of all of his mares, and for many of the stallions that he uses, he knows the genetic type of them. So, in fact, he used the breeding strategy of the speed gene to breed his very good two-year-old last year, Verbal Dexterity, who is in fact a TDN rising star. Verbal Dexterity is a CT genetic type. And he was bred because his dam was a TT, and Jim wanted to make sure that there was more speed in the progeny. So he sent the mare to Vocalized, the stallion who he knew was a CC, and therefore produced a CT.
Now, Emmeline, at least, I don't know about Ireland, but at least in the United States, this is not a sport that traditionally embraces new ideas or, in particular, science. How much resistance did you run into when you started to introduce your ideas and began throwing around scientific terms most trainers have probably never even heard of?
Well, the interesting thing is that everybody really understands genetics, whether they realize it or not, because anytime you're looking at a pedigree page, you're trying to infer or best guess the genes that have been passed down from ancestors in that pedigree to the individual. So many people really intuitively understand genetics, even if they don't necessarily know or need to know the details of how we found these genes. But I wouldn't say necessarily that we met with a lot of resistance. We have a growing, expanding company that's been going for the best part of 8 years now. We have clients in over 30 countries in all of the major bloodstock regions of the world. And many of the top trainers and top owner breeders in the world are using our genetic tests to inform their management practices. But yes, it is a giant leap from the traditional way of doing things. But I think that the feedback that we get is that everybody who has used it has found some benefit in it, because not always will they be able to tell from the pedigree page what genetics can tell. So really what we're trying to do is, or what we can do is, rather than, I suppose, looking at the engine from outside the car, what we can do is open the hood and look inside the engine at actually what is making that horse.
Okay. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate, and a breeder might say, well, I bred this stallion, and he never won a race in his life beyond 6 furlongs, to a mare who broke her maiden at 5.5 furlongs and never won again. Of course the offspring is a sprinter and not a stayer, and I don't need to pay some scientist to tell me that. What would be your answer to someone who made that claim?
Well, it's not actually always the case, because there's an overlap in the distances that the different genetic types can perform at. So if, let's say, I can't remember exactly the details of the scenario you put to me. Yes, a horse that's won a top class 5 furlong race, taken to a mare that's won a top class 5 furlong race, taken to a stallion that's proven group one level at 5 furlongs, most likely they are going to be both CCs or sprinters. Where this is most useful is perhaps in the middle distances, or the bit where it's the, let's say, the gray area. If you have a CT mare and you take that CT mare to a CT stallion 4 times in a row or 4 years in a row, the progeny of that mating, there will be full siblings, will have identical pedigree pages. But 20% or 25% of the time, a foal will be a CC or sprinter type. 25% of the time, you'll produce a TT type, and half of the time, you'll produce a CT type. So you can't tell from that kind of mating what you're likely to produce until you actually test the foal that has been produced. So it's in those situations where the value lies. Many people who are a time-honored horsemen can often tell from the look of the horse, the conformation, and understanding of a pedigree. But even the best horsemen will tell us that a certain proportion of the time they're not going to always get it right, and it's that that part where the value lies. We have to remember that genetics is a part of the puzzle as well. It's not, it's not the silver bullet. It's not going to tell you everything. So we're not setting out to replace the long understandings of a knowledge of horse people in the industry. We're trying to provide an additional tool to support them in best management of their horses.
Now, the discovery of the speed gene was a huge breakthrough, which you got a lot of notoriety for it. So what's on the drawing board now? What are you working on, and what do you hope will be your next quote-unquote breakthrough?
Well, we've developed a range of other tests. The speed gene is, as you pointed out, is a single gene contributing to a specific trait, which is distance. But we are able to now capture genetic information from all of the genes in the genome and package that information into predictions of a range of different traits, one of which we can predict the horses that are most likely to be elite performers. We can make predictions about whether a horse is best suited to dirt or turf surfaces. We've been able to identify genes that contribute to the chance of a horse having a race course start as a two-year-old or a three-year-old. And that's a very interesting test because we found that the genes that are contributing to that aren't necessarily physiological or metabolic genes, but in fact, genes that may be contributing to the temperament of the horse. So those are a few things that we have developed. What's on the horizon? We're now working towards the development of tests for health traits of importance in the thoroughbred. You mentioned earlier on that there may have been resistance in the industry to these performance tests. It's probably worth pointing out that there is caution, particularly among industry bodies. The International Thoroughbred Breeders Federation last year established a policy on genomics and genetic testing and concluded that they saw no value in the widespread use of performance testing, using genomics for performance testing, but that there's potential value in the application of these tools in the development of tests for important health traits. So I'm optimistic about getting broader industry body acceptance in the development of traits that are important to the health and the welfare of the horse. And there are some things that we're working on at the moment that we hope will be able to enable breeders and horse owners to better manage horses that have performance-limiting disorders.
And you touched on this already, but the thing that would be the huge breakthrough would be, again, figuring out whether or not a horse can be an elite performer or not. So here in the United States at the Keeneland September sales, horses go through the ring. Every single last one of them has the most beautiful breeding. They're by Tappet or Warfront, and the mares are grade one winners for the most part, and people are spending hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars on them. At this point, can you look at the genetics of that horse and the genomes and the DNA and predict whether or not the horse will be successful? Understood there are other factors like training and environmental factors, but will that horse, be it a stayer, speed horse, middle distance horse, will it be a good horse? Will it be a successful horse? Can you do that at this point?
We can do that. We don't offer it at the sale, at sales at the moment, at the point of sale, because the tests that we do are quite complicated in the laboratory in that they're quite time-consuming because we're assessing all of the genes, 20,000 genes in the genome. So because of the particular chemistry that's required for that, we're not able to offer that at the point of sale. But we have in the past tested yearlings in advance of sales for clients to help inform their buying decisions. And we hope to, in the future, be able to develop the technologies that the technologies will develop to the point where we can have a situation where we have stall-side testing.
Mm-hmm. And Emily, how accurate have you found these tests to be? How often when you say this horse will be a champion versus a $5,000 claimer, how often are you right?
Well, the speed gene test is extremely accurate. based on our categories, depending on which region of the world, because remember that the there are very different, I suppose, nuances of the racing race pattern in each region. Depending on each region, we've been able to identify that 98% of the horses that we say will fall into a particular category do fall into that category. Depending on the other tests that we are that we're testing for, there's a different range, I suppose, in the accuracy of those. The elite performance test, if an individual is what we refer to as a class one horse, then that individual has, I think it's in the order of a 2.5 times greater chance of being an elite performer than a horse that is categorized as a class four horse.
Interesting. And Emmeline, I saw you give a presentation that I found on YouTube, and about halfway through the presentation, you shifted from the work you do with equines to how this work someday can be applied to human genetics and help mankind with some of the problems. And particularly, you talked about obesity, because there is really no such thing as an obese horse. Could you talk about that a little bit, just about where this might go and how it could help mankind? And I don't mean by mankind buying a good horse, but mankind fighting diseases and making advances and breakthroughs in medical science.
Yeah, the thoroughbred is a fascinating scientific model to work on, and from a genetics perspective is extremely useful, because the thoroughbred comes from a very small number of founding individuals, has been a closed stud book for the last 200 or so years, and there are very high levels of inbreeding. So there's very low levels of what's known as genetic diversity in the thoroughbred. And what this means is that from a genetics science perspective, we need much smaller numbers of horses to do the work that would need to be done in humans, for example. And the really interesting thing about thoroughbreds as well is that over the last number of centuries, at each successive generation, thoroughbreds have been selected for genes that enable elite racecourse performance. And those are genes that contribute to various different metabolic pathways and physiological processes. And many of these are involved in the management of substrates, fats and glucose, and genes involved in metabolism. So understanding how they have been selected and how they are important to the thoroughbred may provide an understanding of how those genes work and interact that could be applied in the human science field.
Emmeline, that was a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck with all your projects. And this sounds like something that is just going to keep progressing and shed a lot more light on the fascinating world of thoroughbred breeding, genetics, genomes, etc. And we again thank you for taking part in the TDN podcast brought to you by TaylorMade.